Part 2, Personal Discoveries. In 1993, I was 49 years old, successful, and feeling on top of the world. I'd come a long way from challenging and humbling beginnings as a boy who grew up on a farm, chased cows, baled hay, and spent long summer days walking barefoot up and down long rows of beets and beans, pulling weeds. When I was a teenager, my father died of leukemia, leaving my mother and six children to tend to the crops and livestock. Being the eldest son, I had to drop out of school and run the family farm. This was common practice back then under those kind of circumstances. By the early 1960s, my brothers were getting older. I felt a need to leave the land for the excitement of the big city. I wound up in the fledgling cable television industry. In the community I lived in, we only had two TV channels. One politically right, the other politically left. So the information we got was very slanted. I quickly saw that cable was the future of television. I jumped into it enthusiastically and had a lot of success organizing marketing campaigns to bring cable to people throughout Montana. I also climbed the poles, drilled the holes, sunk the ground rods, and ran the wire to install cable systems in many homes. After a few years of working with local cable operators, I was hired as a national director of marketing for a Denver company that soon grew to become the largest cable television operator in the United States. It was eventually acquired by AT&T. In 1972, I started my own business, specializing in developing cable television systems, as well as broadcast television and microwave communication properties. The company became the largest provider of cable television marketing and installation services in the country. We had a nationwide army of contract installers working for us. When a cable system was approved for some town or city, we'd send in 10 to 100 installers. They would go through the area and install everybody who wanted cable. Then they would go to the next town and so on. Over the years, we installed cable in millions of homes throughout the country. In an age before the internet, I helped pioneer the first ever cable modem and distribution through personal computers of news reports from news agencies around the world. I also became intimately involved in the early development of programming and marketing for the cable and telecommunication industries. I worked with the top people who created Cable News Network, CNN, Home Box Office, HBO, and other cable networks. I was a highly successful entrepreneur and living the good life. I had a 5,000-square-foot mountaintop home in Colorado with a 360-degree view of Denver and the Rockies. My house was full of art and anything money could buy. In 1993, the good life came tumbling down. I developed a serious abscess in my liver from a root canal procedure. 80% of my liver was badly compromised. The infection had spread throughout my body. All my organs were malfunctioning. I didn't get much hope from the doctors. They suggested that I put my affairs in order. However, one young surgeon told me that there was a chance to survive, although a small one, involving experimental surgery to remove most of my damaged liver. He didn't give me much hope, but it was the only hope I had. So I agreed. After 28 days of painful recovery in the hospital and much physical therapy, I was able to go home. I slowly began to regain my health. It took about 3 or 4 months to be able to walk a few blocks and 6 months to walk a mile. Amazingly, within 9 months, my liver grew back to its original size. In search of a purpose. One morning during my long mending process, I awoke and looked outside and noticed the sky was a deeper blue and the trees were a more vibrant green than I had ever seen before. At that moment, I felt alive again, but very much different from before. A stark realization came over me that I didn't really own my home and the mountain of possessions I had. Rather, they owned me. My life had become all about taking care of my stuff. I'd spent my whole life accumulating, collecting, and taking care of it all, and trying to get more, perhaps to show off how big a success I was. I realized that I had become a slave to my possessions by my own making. At that moment, I decided to set myself free and find something to fill my life with other than possessions. "I don't want any more of this," I said out loud to myself. "I want to do something different. Whatever time I have left, I want to dedicate it to something worthwhile and with purpose." I called my kids. They were all grown and scattered around the country. I told them to come and take whatever they wanted. "Anything you don't take, I'm going to give away," I said. I sold the house, I sold the business to my employees. I went out and bought a recreational vehicle, RV, packed it up with a few necessities and hit the road. I spent the next 4 years driving around the country, looking for myself and my mission. I spent a lot of time with my kids here and there, but a lot of time just doing nothing. I'd drive someplace, park for a while, waiting for something to show up. One night in 1997, I was in Key Largo, Florida. I was getting antsy and impatient. Nothing was happening. Nothing was revealing itself to me. I had been in the same location now for a few months. While sitting and staring across the bay, I asked for guidance. And I knew something was waiting for me. When I returned to the RV, some words popped into my mind, and I remember automatically writing them down on a piece of paper. Become an opposite charge. Well, become an opposite charge to me meant to go out and poke people and stir 'em up. Charge 'em up. I was sure getting impatient enough to do some stirring. Then the second thing I wrote down was, status quo is the enemy. I didn't know what that meant except that I was getting tired of my status quo and doing nothing. That was the end of it. I wrote those thoughts down on a yellow tablet and kept it for some reason. I had no idea what those words really meant. Upon rising the next morning, an odd notion went through my mind that the earth itself was trying to tell me something. I didn't know what, though, but I felt there was some urgency, and I knew I had to go west somewhere for the answer. I drove to Los Angeles and felt it was too crazy. Then I drove to Tucson and Phoenix, and neither of those places felt right. So I headed north and wound up in Sedona at 10 one night. I parked at a recreational vehicle resort by a creek. The next morning I looked out and was enchanted by the beauty of the land. The scenery spoke to my roots of growing up in rural Montana, exposed to Native American culture that emphasized the connectedness to the natural world. I'm staying here, I told myself, until I find what I'm looking for. So I stayed for almost 2 years. I made friends with many local artists and gallery owners. As a hobby and to keep me busy, I spent a lot of my time artistically lighting up the town's many art galleries. My light bulb went off one day in 1998. I was sitting on a park bench and watching the passing parade of tourists from all over the world. At some point, and I don't know why, my awareness zeroed in on what all these different people were wearing on their feet. I saw a lot of those running shoes with the thick rubber or plastic soles. I was wearing them as well. It occurred to me rather innocently that all these people, me included, were insulated from the ground, the electrical surface charge of the earth beneath our feet. I started to think about static electricity and wondered if being insulated like that could have some effect on health. I didn't know the answer one way or another. The notion just popped into my mind. I thought back to my years in television and cable. Before there was cable, you commonly had lots of flex, or noise as we call it, in the TV picture, or you had snow, or lines, and all kinds of electromagnetic interference. If you aren't old enough to remember that, you are likely familiar with the radio interference when you're driving near or under a power line, and you hear all that crackle and pop. In the cable industry, you have to ground and shield the entire cable system in every home, to prevent extraneous electromagnetic signals and fields from interfering with the transmission carried through the cable. That's how you provide the viewer with a perfect signal and a crisp picture, as well as preventing signals on the cable system from leaking out into the environment and possibly disturbing police radio or TV station transmissions. The cable consists of an inner copper conductor, an insulating layer, and an outer shield. The shield is electrically connected to the earth. It is grounded so that the earth can either deliver or absorb electrons and prevent damage from electrical charges. All of the cable systems must be grounded and held at the same electrical potential as the earth's surface. The beginning of an adventure. Little did I know at the time, but my life was about to take a new and totally unexpected direction that would consume practically all my waking hours. It still continues to do so a dozen years later. It all started innocently with that one simple question. Could wearing rubber or plastic-soled shoes, as we all do, and insulating ourselves from the ground, affect health? At the time, I had a particular interest in health, because earlier back surgeries had left me with constant back pain. I never slept well. I'd take Advil to go to bed, and in the morning I'd take Advil to get up and get through the day. I also took other pain medication depending on how bad the pain was. I knew that the body was conductive, that is, it conducts electricity. You don't have to know anything about electricity to understand that simple fact of life. Just go touch a doorknob on a very dry day, and you can see or feel a spark every time. There's always a static charge on the body that builds up when you sit on fabric-coloured furniture or walk on carpets. An amazing experiment. Sitting there watching the foot traffic, I realised that most people, certainly in the industrialised world, had little or no connection to the ground. In other parts of the world, like in the tropics and in Asia, Africa and South America, rural people walk barefoot and often sleep on the ground. They are grounded. I decided to try to answer the question I had asked myself. I went back to the apartment I was renting and picked up my voltmeter. A voltmeter is an instrument that measures the electrical potential differences between the earth and any electrical object, or any two points in an electrical circuit. I connected a 50-foot wire to it and ran the wire out of the living room door and attached it to a simple ground rod I stuck in the earth. Then I started walking around the house and measuring the electrical charges being created on my body from being insulated from the ground. It was easy to measure the static electricity, as it would vary with every step that I took. What I found most interesting was the amount of electromagnetic field, EMF, induced potential in volts on my body. When I walked towards a lamp, the voltage would go up. When I stepped back, the voltage went down. I tested this with all the electrical appliances in the living room and kitchen. The only appliances that did not create EMF voltage on my body were the refrigerator and my computer tower. They were grounded. From my background in the communications industry, this immediately made sense to me, as we had to ground all of our electronic equipment to prevent electrical interference from EMFs. Next, I went to the bedroom, lay down on my bed, and registered the highest level of EMF voltage on my body. The bedroom was the most electrically active area of the apartment. The bed was up against a wall full of hidden electrical wires. I wondered if these electrical fields could be affecting my ability to fall asleep, because sleep was always a big problem. Now my curiosity was really stirred up. The next day I went to the hardware store and bought some metallized duct tape that is used for furnace ducting. I laid some of that tape out on the bed to form a crude kind of grid. I took an alligator clip and attached it to one end of the duct tape grid. I connected a wire to it, ran the wire out the window, and fastened it to another ground rod similar to the one that the voltmeter was connected to. I then lay down on the duct tape grid and noticed that the meter was now showing nearly zero, meaning that I was in sync, that is electrically equivalent to lying directly on the ground outside. Like all the cable systems I had installed, I was physically grounded. I was lying there fooling around with the voltmeter, and the next thing I knew it was morning. I'd fallen asleep with the voltmeter on my chest. I hadn't needed a pill to fall asleep. I had slept soundly for the first time in years, and I had hardly moved at all during the night. "Wow, this is fascinating," I said to myself. Something interesting had happened, but I didn't really understand the meaning of it. So I repeated this experiment on myself the next night. I fell asleep without a pill. The same thing happened the next night, and the next night, and the next. Getting high off the ground. After a few more days like this, I told a couple of friends about it and asked them if I could set up a similar kind of makeshift grid with metallic duct tape in their beds. That's how I started grounding people. It was very innocent. One of the guys I grounded said to me, "You know, something is going on here. My arthritis pain is way down." I didn't think too much about what he said, but a couple of days later I noticed that my own severe chronic pain had improved. I didn't need the pain pills anymore. I was also feeling much better overall. I didn't understand anything about biology. I didn't understand how the nerves or muscles worked. But a concept was dawning. It occurred to me that there might be an analogy between the human body and cable TV. Cable has hundreds of channels of information flowing through it. Similarly, the body has countless nerves, blood vessels, and other channels that conduct electrical signals. Maybe, I thought, when the body is grounded, it prevents the entry of noise, environmental electrical interference, that could disturb the internal circuitry. I started to understand in a simple way that without earth contact, the body was always being charged by the electromagnetic fields and static electricity in the bedroom or office or wherever. When you're grounded, you don't have a charge. When I grounded myself and my friends, the charges were removed, and we all started sleeping better and feeling better. After I grounded half a dozen people or so, consistently improving their sleep and reducing their pain, I started to get a real high. I became more and more excited. I came to the conclusion that I may have made a great discovery. I said to myself, there's something very, very real here that needs to be further investigated. I looked far and wide, but didn't find much information on grounding and health. In 1999, the internet wasn't nearly the information universe it is today. It was still fairly new and I didn't find anything there. I checked out the excellent university medical libraries in Arizona, but didn't come up with anything. There were a few anecdotal stories about Native Americans that were folklorish in nature. I was reminded of my younger days in Montana, where many of my childhood friends were kids from the Indian reservation. I vividly remembered the time when the sister of one of my friends developed a bad case of scarlet fever. She was very sick. Their grandfather dug a pit in the ground and placed the girl in the pit. He built a fire for warmth near the pit and sat next to it for a few days while the girl mostly slept. At the end of the time, she was much better. I also remember going to the home of one of my friends after school and hearing his mother tell him to remove his shoes. "They will make you sick," she said. This all seemed very odd to me at the time, but I remembered that most things the Native Americans did were different from what I was taught to be normal. I later realized that there was always a reason based on much greater knowledge of nature than I was ever taught. I found information about barefoot enthusiasts who have long championed the idea of going unshod because they feel better. Some enthusiasts have formed organizations, such as the Worldwide Society for Barefoot Living, that promotes the benefits of taking shoes and socks off and walking naturally on the earth. Their experience, along with medical research in the fields of biomechanics, strongly suggests that many foot and back problems are partly caused by stresses and strains created by wearing shoes that force us to stand and move in ways the human body was not designed for. One dramatic example of this appears to be the success of barefoot runners. The shod foot may explain the high injury frequency in North American runners, in contrast to the extremely low running-related injury frequency in barefoot populations. Researchers have found, for instance, less force on the joints and less plantar fasciitis and shin splinters. This, however, wasn't really the information I was looking for. I did find considerable information about electrostatic discharge and how people working on computer components and electronic chips had to be grounded in order not to damage any of the components electrically. But that wasn't it either. I had to keep looking. I also wanted to know whether there was any possibility that sleeping earthed, as I had started to call grounding, could be harmful. Electronics experts reassured me that the concept was perfectly safe. If you think about it, being earthed is the natural state of living systems throughout history. It is the separation from earth that is unnatural. Beyond these few things, however, I couldn't uncover any concrete information anywhere relating to the possible health effects due to loss of natural grounding. Chapter 4. Challenges of an Amateur Scientist. Emotionally, I was on a roller coaster. I came to the conclusion that nobody, past or present, had researched the grounding-health connection. I couldn't find any relevant information. When I realized that nobody else knew about it, I felt like it was the best day in my life and that I had discovered something important with which to help society in a big way. I had found my mission, and I was the only one who knew anything about it. The euphoria didn't last long. Maybe that's the way it is with discoveries. The self-doubt starts to creep in that comes from being alone with some important understanding or breakthrough before anybody accepts your idea. In my case, anybody who I talked to thought I was nuts. Nobody took me seriously. Nobody knew anything. My enthusiasm would always be returned by blank stares of indifference or negative responses. Who said this was so? People wanted hard facts. They wanted science. I was just an ex-cable guy talking about how the ground could reduce your pain and let you sleep better. What did I know? What credentials did I have? So I went quickly from the best day in my life to the worst day. I was feeling down in the dumps one day in 1999, as I was sitting and talking with one of the guys in Sedona whom I'd grounded. He was telling me how good he felt and how big the change was in his life. Hearing him say those words reignited a spark and lifted my spirits. I said to him, "I'm feeling good from this too. Other people are telling me the same thing. This is real. I'm not making anything up. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I've just got to find the answers." With new resolve, I packed up and drove to California in my RV, an amateur detective trying to solve a mystery. I figured I'd spend a few months out there and hopefully turn up some real expertise I could tap into, some people to teach me more or to figure out how to quantify what all this was about. Stranger in a strange land. The first thing I did was try to interest sleep researchers in Southern California. I made phone calls, I knocked on doors. I introduced myself as a guy with an electrical background who has made some interesting observations about sleep and pain. I had seen dramatic results. I said I wanted to get some experts to validate my observations. In pursuit of expertise, I felt like the hero of a Robert Heinlein's old science fiction classic, Stranger in a Strange Land. I felt I was on another planet. I didn't speak the language, they didn't speak mine. Imagine how I felt walking into the office of a scientist or doctor, if I got that far. The office walls were full of awards and diplomas. These were individuals who had spent years becoming experts in their field. And here I was with absolutely no formal training in the field. The experts used biological terms I had never heard of. When I would turn the conversation to electrical concepts that I understood, like voltages, electric fields, grounding, and positive and negative charges in the body, they were about as clueless as I was hearing them talk about what they knew. Communication was just one problem. Another was that most scientists or doctors had no desire to get involved or lend their name to anything out of left field like this, something with no scientific history or legitimacy. One scientist sat back and laughed in my face. He asked if I expected him to believe that sticking a nail in the ground and connecting it to an iron bedpad and getting people to sleep on it will reduce pain. He said that he wouldn't believe it even if it were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. One doctor told me that even if what I was saying were true, why should he tell patients to take off their shoes and get well for free? Another stated that I needed to provide him with all the published research relating to grounding the body, and he would then take a look at it. When I told him there was no research and that was why I was approaching him, he said to come back after someone substantiates the validity of grounding. One amused researcher asked if I had any idea about what it takes to do research. He told me it would take 5 years and $5 million to put together a real scientific study and get it published, if it even got that far. Most of the experts I spoke to were polite, but nobody took any interest. They sent me on my way and wished me good luck. That's when I decided to do the first study myself. Getting the science ball rolling. All wasn't lost, though. At one university sleep clinic, I managed to talk to some friendly students. They said they would be willing to counsel me how to do a study. I didn't have a clue. One thing I had to figure out was how I could ground people for any length of time, long enough so that I could identify a measurable result. People are always moving around, they are busy. So I went back to my own experience. The only way to do this, I realized, was when somebody was in bed at night when sleeping. That's the only time people are still. That seemed to be the most practical way to produce a measurement. So a bed pad of some sort seemed the best way to go. But I had to design something more substantial than the crude metallic duct tape grid I was using for myself and friends. I contacted a company that makes protective equipment for the electronics industry. I had some special conductive fiber materials manufactured that I then bonded to 1x2 foot wool felt pads. The test subjects were to sleep directly on the pad placed on their bed. I fixed a metallic snap on each pad so I could connect it to a wire running to a ground rod stuck in the earth outside the bedroom window. Now that I had a pad, I needed people for the experiment. As you can imagine, no doctor would lend me patients for my little study. I was on my own. I got the inspiration for volunteers one day while getting my hair cut. I heard people in the salon talking about their health issues. I figured that a beauty salon could be a good source of volunteers. I convinced the woman who operated the salon to try grounding first. I set her up with a grounded bed pad. Her feedback was positive. She was sleeping better. She enthusiastically approached some of her clients to participate in the study. I found others by leaving flyers in 10 beauty shops in Ventura, California, where I was living at the time. One of the people who stepped forward was a nurse. She was a great help, smoothing the way so I could enter the homes of strangers, explain the bed pads, actually place them in people's beds, and connect them to simple ground rods I stuck in the earth outside their bedroom windows. What I was doing was not exactly your ordinary house call. In the end, I was able to enroll 60 people, 38 women and 22 men, with sleep problems and a variety of joint and muscle pain. Based on the advice I had received from the sleep clinic students, I divided the volunteers into two groups. Half slept on the pads that were actually grounded. For comparison, the other half slept on bed pads that looked like they were connected to the ground rods, but I inserted a spacer on the wire to block conduction. The volunteers did not know if they were actually connected or not. I was the only person who knew. The nurse interacted with the people during the 30 days experiment. Then she collected the data. We then wrote up the experiment as an anecdotal study and published it in 2000 on ESD, an online journal that provides articles, technical papers, news items, and book reviews on the subject of electrostatics. The results were extraordinary. Here is what we found afterwards when we compared the grounded group with the ungrounded one. 85% went to sleep more quickly. 93% reported sleeping better throughout the night. 82% experienced a significant reduction in muscle stiffness. 74% experienced elimination or reduction of chronic back and joint pain. 100% reported feeling more rested when they woke up. 78% reported improved general health. Several participants reported unexpected but significant relief from asthmatic and respiratory conditions, rheumatoid arthritis, hypertension, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, and premenstrual syndrome. There were also reports of fewer hot flashes. Discovery of the magic pain patch. One woman who participated in the study had crippling rheumatoid arthritis in the joints of her hands and arms, and she had difficulty walking. I wanted to measure how much electrical charge she had on her body in her bedroom, and asked her to hold a small handheld tester for me. She couldn't. Her arthritis was too severe and too painful. So in order to get a reading, I adhered an electrode patch, the same kind used by doctors when they do EKG tests, on her forearm and connected it with an alligator clip to the ground wire coming into her bedroom. I then connected and disconnected the clip in order to read the change in the body charge between being grounded and ungrounded. After chatting for 5 or 10 minutes while I was setting up the bed pad system, the woman said the pain in her arm improved considerably. She then asked me to move the patch to her other arm. I did not believe what she was saying, but I did what she asked and moved the patch to the other arm. Minutes later, she said the pain in that arm had gone down a good deal as well. After leaving her home, I immediately called several acquaintances I knew who had arthritis and other painful conditions, and gave them each setups with electrode patches, earthing wires, and ground rods. I wanted to see if I could repeat this dramatic reduction of localized pain. Remarkably, each and every one of them reported a rapid reduction in pain. A couple of them referred to it as the magic pain patch. This is when I first discovered that localized earthing of the body in this manner produced fast and dramatic reduction of local pain. It was kind of like pouring water on a fire. Now I was really excited. I felt encouraged, but still no scientist would talk to me seriously about it. My student buddies told me that I needed to produce more solid information to support my idea. Anecdotal studies wouldn't be enough, they said, and wouldn't stand up to scientific scrutiny. Refining the discovery. Initially, I regarded the positive results I was witnessing as a consequence of eliminating static electricity and/or the shielding of the body from the environmental electric fields. This assumption turned out to be absolutely true, but accounted only in part for all the good results. When I installed the earthing system in people's homes for the first study, I always measured their body voltages while they were lying in bed, both before and after placing the grounding pad on the bed. When I measured people with extremely high body voltage, I would think to myself that I should get some really good results from this person. One day I set up a volunteer, a 65-year-old man, who complained of chronic pain and problems with sleeping. He had no electrical devices near his bed. His floor was bare concrete. When I measured his body voltage, it registered near zero. With very little body voltage, I thought we wouldn't get any results from him. However, his feedback in the end was as good as others with high body voltages. His case was the first indication I had that earthing alone produced the results that I myself had experienced and observed in others. This realization stopped me in my tracks. I then had to learn everything I could about the Earth's electrical properties. I learned, for instance, that the Earth's electrical surface charge is always negative, meaning that the surface is filled with free electrons. They are able to move and reduce a positive charge. In nature, lightning is the best example of a negative charge reducing a positive charge. If earthing people reduces their chronic pain, that suggested to me that pain is related to positive charge. I then began to ground people in low or no electric field environments to replicate this observation and confirm that it was the grounding alone that reduced pain. The results were consistent. Earthing reduced pain no matter what the electrical environment. It wasn't until later that I learned the connection between chronic pain and inflammation and the role of electrons. Normalizing the hormone of stress. When the first study was published, it created a big stir among researchers and health practitioners concerned about the health risks from exposure to environmental electric fields. One such person I met at this time was Maurice Garley, a retired anesthesiologist in Southern California, who was interested in electric field research. I told him what I had learned. He pretty much dismissed my theory, but he said he would like to prove me wrong. It didn't make sense to him that grounding could do what I said it did. Dr. Garley decided on a pilot study. He would measure the circadian secretion of cortisol on people before and after they slept grounded, over a period of a few weeks. Cortisol is known as the stress hormone. When you become worried, fearful, and anxious, your cortisol level rises. The rise stimulates a branch of the autonomic nervous system, known as the sympathetic system. Your body shifts into a vigilant mode, ready if needed to fight or run, the so-called fight or flight mode. The hormone level comes back down after the vigilant and tension ease. A life of constant stress, from common things like money, work, or relationship problems, also causes your cortisol level to rise and remain high, creating a kind of sympathetic overdrive in the body. In our day and age, a consistently high level is a classic indicator of stress and is known to contribute to many health problems like sleep disorders, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, reduced immune response, autoimmune disease, mood disturbances, and blood sugar irregularity. Stress of this kind also promotes inflammation in the body. My first study was subjective, based on the feedback of people I grounded. This time we would measure a substance produced in the body, thus providing an objective measurement for the effect of earthing on physiology. It was a big step forward scientifically. For the study, I needed something that would hold up even better than the previous bedpad. So I designed a sturdier bedpad that would fit over the whole mattress. We enrolled 12 subjects who complained of sleep problems, pain, and stress. They slept on the earthing pads I made up for 8 weeks. The individual daily cortisol levels were determined at 4-hour intervals over a 24-hour period just before the start of the study, and then once again at the 3-quarter mark via a standard saliva test. The participants also reported daily how they were feeling throughout the entire experiment. The study was published in a 2004 issue of the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. The conclusion was significant. Earthing during sleep resynchronizes cortisol secretion more in alignment with its natural normal rhythm, highest at 8 a.m. and lowest at midnight. Subjectively, the participants reported improved sleep along with reduced pain and stress. Even more impressive was the fact that the improvements often occurred within the very first days of sleeping grounded. Following is a summary of the findings. All but 2 subjects developed more natural cortisol rhythm, and one of the exceptions was someone already in a normal pattern. 11 of 12 participants said they fell asleep faster. All 12 reported waking fewer times during the night, from an average of 2.5 times to 1.4 times, a 44% reduction. 9 out of 12 said they felt more refreshed and less fatigued, with more daytime energy, while 3 reported no change. Of the 11 subjects who said before grounding that their pain interfered with general activities, 7 now reported improvement, and only 4 said there was no change. 9 out of 12 described reductions in their emotional stress and were less bothered by problems, such as anxiety, depression, and irritability. 2 said that there was no change. 1 said the stress was worse. 6 out of 7 participants reported improvements of gastrointestinal symptoms. 5 out of 6 women with either PMS and/or hot flashes said their symptoms were better. All 3 individuals with TMJ pain said their discomfort was less. The sleep connection. The study produced another quite interesting finding that was not published, but provided more evidence about the multiple benefits of earthing. 8 of our participants had an increase in melatonin, ranging from 2 to 6%. 3 subjects had no change in their melatonin level, and 1 experienced a decrease of 6%. The finding was exciting because melatonin is an important hormone that helps regulate sleep and other biological rhythms, and is also a powerful antioxidant agent with anti-cancer properties. Right from the start of my experimenting with earthing, and by right from the start, I mean my own initial experience, the positive impact on sleep has been very noticeable. This is a big deal, We all need good rest to allow our bodies to repair and recover from each day's activities. That's the way nature sets things up. Cycles of rest and activity. After I saw how grounding was helping people sleep, I started to research the sleep problem. I found a 2002 Newsweek article entitled, In Search of Sleep, that said there were an estimated 70 million problem sleepers in the United States alone. I Can't Sleep was the title of a Business Week cover story in 2004. From those and many other sleep-related articles from all over the world, it became quite clear to me that quality sleep improves overall health and that poor sleep does just the opposite. I also learned that back in the early 1970s, researchers identified several behaviors that were positively linked to length of life. Sleep headed the list, followed by exercise, eating breakfast, and avoiding snacks. Weight, smoking, and moderating alcohol intake also made the list. Later on, researchers found that sleep deprivation may enable bacteria growth, and that sufficient sleep may slow down bacteria growth. More recently, sleep deprivation, even a modest reduction, was found to promote inflammation in the body. Loss of sleep, even for a few short hours during the night, apparently prompts the immune system to turn against healthy tissue and organs. In my ongoing sleuthing, I learned that since the pioneering research in the 1950s of Hans Selye, the father of stress medicine, medical researchers believe there is a relationship between imbalances in cortisol and inflammatory pain. It was becoming clearer and clearer to me that earthing was something very special that could make people's lives better in a multitude of ways. It was this vision that kept me going, because there were many times when I frankly felt overwhelmed by the challenge of me, an unknown quantity with no degree by my name, or even a high school education, proving a total foreign concept to the scientific community. More challenges, beds, spouses, and fashion. My first sleep study created a buzz when it was published in 2000. I was hounded by people wanting bed pads. All of a sudden, there was a demand for this quasi-product. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was becoming somewhat of a designer of earthing pads. Later, when I got involved in earthing people in the world of sports, athletes didn't want a whole bed pad. It was too much to carry around. They wanted something they could roll up and put in a small bag and take with them when they traveled. Thus, the recovery bag was born. Conductive silver strands woven into cotton sheets fitted together like a sleeping bag. The products developed both out of a demand by people who heard about earthing, as well as a desire on my part to promote scientific research. It all started on an ad lib basis with conductive duct tape and a wire connection to a ground rod. That's what I used in Arizona on myself, friends, and other interested people. It was all makeshift, nothing sophisticated. As this evolved, people simply wanted something more refined. People wanted sheets. So I started consulting with experts in the fabric industry. I first dabbled in polyester with carbon threads. But nobody wanted polyester. So I switched to cotton with conductive silver strands. That development cost more than $1 million and took 3 to 4 years. I first had to find manufacturers to deal with what for them was a nuisance factor, and then test and retest. These were all prototype products that cost a lot of money to make, and for the most part, I was giving them away to athletes, doctors, and people in the studies and their relatives. It all mushroomed. I would get rid of one model, then order more, then get another batch of new material, and then another flurry of orders and requests. I never for a moment thought I would be in the sleeping or bedding industry. In the early days, a lot of doctors started getting products for their patients. One of them called and asked if I had some kind of a half pad, a sheet that didn't cover the whole bed. I asked why he wanted it. He referred to the spouse problem. Spouse problem? Here is what was going on. If a woman got a bed pad, the husband would get upset and say he didn't want anything to do with this, that it was just a waste of money. If the husband brought it home, the woman would say this is crazy and get it off her side of the bed. Throughout this time, the mode of the day was to put sheets on your bed with the highest possible thread count. The buzz was 300 to 600 to 1200 and then 2400 count sheets. The higher the count, the more luxurious, softer and finer the fabric is supposed to be. This concept became very popular, but some experts think that higher thread counts simply mean a higher price tag. Anyway, I got caught up in this. If you had anything else but high thread count on your bed, you were not in fashion. Then there was the issue of designer colors to match decor and color tastes. In a typical marriage, nothing goes on a bed without a woman's permission, so you couldn't put just anything on a bed, no matter what the health benefits. I didn't need these kinds of extraneous issues. One day I decided to just make a half sheet that could be placed across the width of the bottom of the bed. You make contact with it with your feet, like putting your feet on the earth. And this is your barefoot connection. The half sheet could also be used lengthwise on one side if a spouse didn't want to have anything to do with it. The half sheet solved a lot of my headaches, as well as reducing the pain level for many people who slept on them.